So yesterday I just summarized some points from the Bhagavad Gita, which is actually the essential of the Bhagavad Gita. If you know that, you kind of know Bhagavad Gita in one sense, because that's the final conclusion. That there's different processes, but ultimately if you want success in any process, even if it's not a direct process of attaining Krishna, still you have to do some bhakti. And if you want to get Krishna in any form, either close or far away, then you have to do direct bhakti. Now that bhakti may be mixed also with yoga, kama, or jnana, and accordingly you'll get some distant relationship with Krishna. And if you want a close relationship with Krishna in prema, that's the close relationship rather than bhava or anything less, then you have to do ananya bhakti, which we say is, say, pure bhakti or whatever. But that pure bhakti doesn't mean that it starts out pure, that you're, you know, already liberated. Ananya bhakti is also a sadhana. But its quality is, even though we're impure and we're doing it, we only worship Krishna, we only follow the process of bhakti, we only have the motive of pleasing Krishna. That's what it means. And we may not be perfect at it also. So therefore one can fall from that platform. So Bharat fell, Chitraketu fell, and so many other people fell. Exalted souls fell. Chitraketu was a very advanced devotee. Bharat was in bhava stage. He fell. But in spite of that, the Lord still considered these people a devotee. And those devotees also still consider themselves as servants of the Supreme Lord, in spite of the fact that they fall. And they take that fall as some sort of advantage for them to increase their dedication to the Lord. So they don't really lose by that also. And so they advance further on later. And the Lord considers them a devotee, as he says, Name Bhakta Pranasyati, my devotee is never vanquished. So therefore, in all cases, he helps that devotee who gives himself, even if he's not pure, and even if he has faults, but if he dedicates himself to the Supreme Lord, then the Lord helps that. So when Krishna says, my devotee is never vanquished, that means that type of devotee. The other ones, we won't expect that. But the one who fully gives himself to Krishna, Krishna will never leave that person, even if he has faults. So therefore it says, even if you have the most sinful person, I still consider you my devotee. I consider that. If Krishna considers it, we must also consider that the person is a devotee. So Krishna considers that person sadhu, as a devotee. Even he has faults, even he does sin, even he falls, whatever. Why? Because he gave himself completely to Krishna. And he doesn't get sidetracked onto other things. So that, of course, is ultimately the glory of bhakti, that it brings Krishna under control. Krishna sacrifices himself for the devotee, and that's actually the greatest quality of the Supreme Lord, that he gives himself to the devotee. But he only gives himself to that devotee, that the bhakta, the real bhakta. So unfortunately the paper's not here, but I'd summarize that. I just give quotes from Bhagavad Gita to illustrate the different things: karma, jnana, yoga, with a little bit of bhakti. And then karma Mr. Bhakti, jnana Mr. Bhakti, yoga Mr. Bhakti, which is bhakti but a little bit of mixture, and then ultimately pure bhakti. So these are the different things which are presented in Bhagavad Gita, ultimately. And ultimately the pure bhakti is the best one. So that was summarized here. I had a little table here, and if you look at that, then you'll figure out what all that is all summarized here in this little table here. Now, in spite of that, so as I said, these all have separate, different goals. If you're a karmi and you do karma with a little bit of bhakti, then you get your material desires fulfilled and you can go to Svargaloka or have enjoyment on this earth. If you do jnana and you have a little bit of bhakti, then you can get moksha, impersonal Brahman realization. If you do yoga, whatever you want, if you want paramatma, you can get that. If you want moksha, you can also get that. If you want siddhis, you can also get that. And if you do mixed devotional service, then you also get different things. So you may get salokya or sarupya, something like that, distant with the Lord, but at a great distance, and without a developed relationship. If you're a little better than that, you're the jnani. Among the four types, that jnani is not it's not the other jnani. This is a bhakta who is a little mixture of jnana, Mr. Bhakta. Then you actually get a relationship with the Lord, but it's only at the stage of rati, it's not prema, and it's only shanta. It's neutral. And then, if one does pure bhakti, then you get the other relationships. That's dasya, sakya, etc. There are exceptions to this, however. That is, when the devotee show mercy, or Krishna shows mercy, then one can actually surpass, and if one were at a lower stage, one can advance. And of course, these people in the material world, they can advance from karma to karma yoga, from karma yoga to gyan yoga, from gyan yoga to gyan mitra bhakti, and maybe they can even get to pure bhakti. And if they continue in pure bhakti, then of course they can also get relationship with Krishna ultimately. But if they fix themselves on this one form and they refuse to change, you know, and they go all the way through with mixed bhakti, then they will get this type of liberation or salokya with a distant relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the case of Krishna, there's also an added element, several remarkable features. One is that when Krishna appears, even the demons get elevated beyond what one would expect. So the remarkable thing is that Krishna liberates the demons in spite of the fact that they should go to hell. And not only liberates them and gives them impersonal liberation, he also puts them higher. And so we'll see that in the examples, some of the examples, how Putana gets a form in the spiritual world as a nurse. So she actually gets a relationship with the Lord of some sort. However, it is also clarified, if she can get that, the devotee must get better than that. Obviously. So that her form of nurse is not as good as the devotees who take up the role of Vatsalya Rasa with the Supreme Lord favorably. They must get much more than that. So if she can get that, they must get much more. So these are the exceptional cases of Krishna, where he actually takes even the demons, people unfavorable and unexpectedly, he puts them in a position where they are actually almost as good as the devotees. But that's exceptional. This is, it seems to be only with Krishna. The other forms of the Lord don't do this. This is one remarkable thing about Krishna. He does this. The other remarkable thing about Krishna is his sweetness. His sweetness is very special. Sweetness of form, sweetness of quality, sweetness of pastimes, sweetness of his devotees, sweetness of his flute, and sweetness of his powers even. Different powers he exhibits in Raja. These are all very, very special. So, to attain that, it requires something special. To get prema is very special. But to get realization of that sweet form of Krishna is even more special. That requires something else. So it requires a particular type of bhakti for that. So we will also see that when we discuss Krishna's birth, we will see there's a difference between Vasudeva and Devaki and Yasoda and Nanda. There's a great difference. And it's all because of the way they are treating the Supreme Lord and their realization. Therefore we get all sorts of these categories are there, and one gets all these variety of relationships according to how you worship the Lord and how you conceive of the Lord. It's the first verse I quoted yesterday, as you surrender unto me, I reward you. So of course we can always change our mode of surrender in advance, and then of course we get a higher reward. But if we don't, we get something, but it'll be on a different level. And if we go to perfection in that way, we'll only be fixed on that level. So, any questions there? It's clear, isn't it? Yeah, the nature in the material world, we are, even though we're supposed to be doing Uttama Bhakti or Ananya Bhakti, because we're not at the highest level, that is prema, therefore we'll have obstacles. That is, we do sadhana, and we go through the stages of anartha, navritti, anishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. So most of us are going to be at the stage of anartha, navritti, anishta, in that sort of area. Which means that by the process, we become purified and the obstacles disappear. But they all don't disappear immediately. Ultimately, bhakti destroys all the obstacles. It's the first quality of bhakti is klesha gni, which means destruction of klesha. And klesha means karmas, which are the miseries we get, the source of miseries, which are the acts. The acts are caused by the desires. The desires are caused by ignorance, avidya. So all of these things are destroyed by the process of bhakti. So therefore, that means all of our desires for enjoyment in the material world, all the ignorance and our false ego and our identification with the material body, and all the acts and all the effects of the acts of past karmas of suffering, what we get now, all these are wiped out by bhakti, but not immediately. Go step by step. So therefore, we will have obstacles on the way. In the beginning, we'll have obstacles, and as we progress, we'll have obstacles, but gradually the things are getting cleared away. Not all at once. It's a gradual process. So we'll get those obstacles. It's to be expected. Nevertheless, we have to continue. So that is, of course, what we call the vyavasayatmaka buddhi. One has to have this very determined, fixed intelligence to decide, okay, we're only going to do it for Krishna, and no matter what happens, if we have all these difficulties, whatever, we still continue. That's the mood of devotion, actually. That's one of the angas of devotional service. Does that come under prayers? Prayers, lal samai and dainya, to reveal one's fallen nature. So that actually, when the exalted souls do that, that is an expression of their bhava, of their love, actually. And we shouldn't think that they are very fallen. But the exalted devotees, that's what they feel like. As Lord Chaitanya also says, I'm like a little atom at your lotus foot like that. If I can aspire for that, then that's my perfection. Yeah? But obviously he's speaking as a very exalted devotee, because also he's saying, well, one moment of separation is like 12 years. So that's only an expression of their humility as a devotee. That's one expression actually comes out even in prema, in the Vyabhachari Bhavas, this type of humility and lowness, feeling low. So on that stage, that's only an expression. But for us, of course, there will be problems. There will be problems. It's the material world. Nevertheless, the idea of the devotee is that by getting knowledge and association and the practice, then gradually he can overcome those obstacles. Yeah, they can get discouraged also. Therefore, like in Nectar of Instruction, there says one should be enthusiastic, usaha, nishchayad, one should have conviction, and dayad, one should have patience. These things are good qualities to have to reinforce our practice. Yeah? So if we can have those qualities, that will be an aid to us. If we don't, then we'll have more difficulties. But still, if somehow one has that dedication to continue, that is the quality which Krishna will be attracted to, and he'll also help us in the process. So of course, Krishna, like in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says, the process of worshipping the impersonal Brahma is very difficult. It is much more difficult, full of klesha. We're trying to, the person going for moksha is trying to get rid of klesha, but the process to get there is full of klesha. Very difficult, he says. but they want to get rid of all the klesha ultimately. So compared to that, then he says, bhakti is easier. It is quicker. Very quickly, I will deliver you from the ocean of samsara. Ocean of samsara is all the problems we're having in the material world. So compared to that, the process of bhakti is much quicker. It's very quickly. Why? Because I will deliver you. Krishna takes his role in this. He does not take that role with the others and help them out individually. But Krishna says, I will give you the intelligence by which you come to me, and I will deliver you from the ocean of samsara like that. And of course, Vishnu Chakravarti's purport then gives the example of a Garuda flying down and Vishnu there, and he's pulling the devotees out of the material world like this. So the Lord, in other words, takes a personal interest in the devotee. So that is why it is quicker. It still may take time. So we see Bharat, even though he was an elevated person, came in, you know, one of the dynasties, the original dynasties of kings. And even though he got to the stage of Baba, still he forgot. He had a problem. He forgot to worship the Lord, and he remembered a deer instead. He became a deer. And then after that, he got his perfection. So it took him time also. But nevertheless, he tolerated. He understood, okay, this is... And that's, of course, the devotee. He is advised. What does Krishna become attracted to? The devotee, when he suffers, then he accepts that suffering as the mercy of the Lord. And he understands that my karmas are still operating. And the karmas are because I did something, not because the Lord's trying to afflict me. But it's my responsibility. I've done something, therefore I'm suffering like this. I did something like this to somebody else, and therefore this is what I'm getting back. So I deserve that, so I can't really escape from that. I should pay for that somehow. So this is my, you know, my payment for that. And it's the mercy of the Lord that I should realize this and accept that. And at the same time, he continues to serve the Lord with surrender, in spite of all the obstacles or whatever. So then that person becomes Dayabak. He becomes the recipient, the rightful recipient of the Lord's mercy. Because he has that attitude of tolerating the difficulties he's going through in the material world, and at the same time, not deviating from his service to the Lord. So that is his qualification, which the Lord treasures. Yeah, well, yeah. See, the mercy's devotee is actually also the Lord's mercy. We should not separate the two. Of course, we will say you should go through the devotee because generally we cannot approach the Lord directly. But we should also understand that the devotee's mercy is non-different from the Lord's mercy. Krishna has his kripa shakti, that is his mercy energy. But he doesn't give it out directly. He gives that to the devotees, and through the devotees it comes out. Just like we have a light and there's a wire, and then there's a generator somewhere and electricity comes through there. So the electricity is like the kripa shakti coming from the generator, who is Krishna. But in order to manifest, it has to go from somewhere. It has to come out through somewhere, some source, some wire. So the devotee is like the wire. And it comes through him, and then it will manifest in this material world. So ultimately, it belongs to Krishna. It's all Krishna. It will manifest to the devotee. So that is the usual process, that Krishna will manifest his mercy through the devotee. And therefore, that is why... devotee association is the number one element in devotional service, because that's how we get the mercy. Any question? No, it was Shantarati. The Gyanmesra Bhakta gets to Shantarati. That's a general statement. But in cases we find, as in the case of Sukadeva Goswami, he advanced to Prema. And of course others also, there's examples of others also who got to Prema.
When he was advancing to Prema, he wasn't Gyanmesra Bhakta anymore.
Yeah, obviously he went beyond the Brahman realization. Due to association, mercy, whatever, and then he got to a very high level. Yeah, we all have to take association, then we have to practice something, not the Gyan, Mr. Bhakti, and we can't do that. We have to practice pure bhakti, and then we go higher. So by association, by mercy, we can advance beyond that, and then come to the higher stage of pure bhakti. Okay. Okay, the appearance of Krishna. Actually, I was just reading. Vishnu says that actually we shouldn't think that Krishna descends from the spiritual world. He's always here. He's eternal. He's eternal. And his Dhamma is eternal. So it doesn't suddenly appear from somewhere else. It's just that he manifests at this time. That's all. And he uses this opportunity of being born, so-called being born. That's the way in which he manifests himself, so everyone can see him. But actually, his Leela is going on eternally anyway, just we cannot see it. And it's not that he has to come from anywhere. Yeah, he's always there. Yeah, just we cannot see him. And if he leaves, he doesn't leave also. That's what I'll discuss that later also. And when he left and he went to Mathura, actually he came back and nobody saw him. Or at least some of the people saw him, and another form they didn't see him. So it's like dual roles they were playing. So anyway, when Krishna is born, so-called born, it's actually an actual birth in one sense. And at the same time, he's unborn. So it's very difficult for us to conceive of that. But we have to accept that it happens, that he actually appears and he's a small child and he grows up and everything like that. It's not an illusion. It's not a material form. It's actually God. And he does this. So he does take a birth in one sense, in this sense. At the same time, he's also eternally here in the, you know, but we cannot see him also. In that sense, he doesn't take birth. So by his mercy, he shows this taking birth, and etc. And why? Because he wants to give pleasure to the devotees. That's his reason. We all know the story of Krishna's birth, that the devatas were complaining because Kamsa was harassing them. So they went to Lord Brahma. And then that Brahma actually was not in Satyaloka, apparently. That Brahma was on Mount Meru, actually. Another Brahma. Another form of Brahma. He has two forms. That other Brahma was busy hearing some singing. He went to this other Brahma. And then Brahma went to the Nilga Ocean, and he could not see Vishnu. Even he could not even see Vishnu. And then he meditated, and then he got the message, and the Lord said, I will appear, etc., in the material world, and you also, all you devatas, should come and appear with me. So then the story involves how Krishna appeared through Vasudeva into the womb of Devaki and then was born. Before that, however, we see that the Vishnu said, you appear with this Maya Devi. Yoga Maya will also appear with you. Vishnu Chakravarti makes it very clear that there are two Mayas. There is Mahamaya and there is Yoga Maya. And we shouldn't really confuse their functions. And the Mahamaya is an amsa, or is an expansion of the Yoga Maya. They both have a similar function in that they create illusion, or they make things hide things. But the function of Yoga Maya operates only with the devotees, and it will hide things from the devotees for certain leelas. Brahma suddenly seeing that all of these cowherd boys were Vishnu forms. And then suddenly they all disappear again. And he sees little cowherd boys and calves running everywhere. So this is the operation of Yoga Maya, seeing and not seeing. In the case of the materialists, they cannot see Krishna at all. Or when Sisupal sees Krishna, he sees Krishna as an ordinary human being, as a cheater. He cannot see his spiritual form, even though it's right before him. Or Duryodhana, when he sees the universal form, when Krishna went to make peace with the Kauravas, and then Duryodhana said, catch Krishna, and we'll put him in jail. And then Krishna expanded himself into the universal form. So Duryodhana said, no, that's not anything special. He just is a magician. He's creating some magic. It's not actually God. It's not the universal form. So it's a magic. So all this is Mahamaya operating. For the demons and their illusion of God or whatever they have, it's all Mahamaya operating. Who's an expansion of the other spiritual Maya, Yoga Maya. So both of these operated, came into operation when Krishna had his pastimes on earth. Of which, of course, we're more interested in the Yoga Maya function for the devotees. So that Yogamaya doesn't touch the other demons and things like that. That's the Mahamaya that acts for the demons. So when the devotees, when in the prison house, everyone, when Mother Yasoda is sleeping and she doesn't know who came out of her womb, that is Yogamaya operating, not Mahamaya. But when the demons are sleeping, when the prison guards went to sleep, that's Mahamaya operating on them. So both of them are functioning. So the personality who appeared, who finally was killed by Kamsa, or he tried to kill her anyway, and he snatched her on the floor and she rose up in the air, that is not Yogamaya, actually. That is only Mahamaya, because demons cannot touch Yogamaya. But it's an expansion of Yogamaya. So sometimes she may be called Yogamaya, etc. Yeah, which is Mahamaya. Mahamaya. And it says that you will be worshipped as Chandi and so on, so on, so on, so on, so on, all these different places. This is Shakti. The people that worship Shakti in this material world. So that's not the Yogamaya, the spiritual Yogamaya. In Bhagavad Gita, we find an interesting verse here. Naham prakasya sarvasa yogamaya samavrata. So there was a hada that yogamaya there, but it seems to be he's talking about the demons. But Vishwanathagar says, no, that's not the demons there. The first line is about the devotees. I am not revealed to the devotees because of my yogamaya. And for the demons, of course, they can't see me because of mahamaya. So he interprets that whole verse as the yogamaya as being the spiritual maya for the devotees. So therefore, sometimes the devotees cannot see Krishna. Krishna departed from Raja. But he always is in Raja. But why they couldn't see him? Why? Yogamaya. Or Krishna leaves Dwarka. Why? No, he's always there. But he left. Why? Because of Yogamaya. So sometimes, even in the Dham, Krishna will disappear. That is Yogamaya operating, not Mahamaya. But for the demons, they can't see Krishna because of Mahamaya, not because of Yogamaya. So, therefore, along with Krishna, he said, then Maya Devi should appear. So actually both forms take their role when Krishna is born. Previous to Krishna, there was Balaram, and previous to Balaram, there were also six other children who were actually killed by Kamsa. So these children actually were also, they have a long history. They were the sons of Marichi, actually, who was the son of Brahma. And when Brahma ran after his daughter Vak, then they were laughing and they disrespected him. So because of that, they had to take birth as a demon family. So they became the, I think it's the grandsons of Hiranyakasipu. And their father was Kalanemi. And then they got cursed again by Hiranyakasipu because they began to worship Lord Brahma to get extra powers. So they could be invincible, no one could kill them. So then Hiranyakasipu cursed them again, said, because of this, your father will kill you. You will be born again, and your own father will kill you. So then Kalanemi became Kamsa, and they were born in the womb of Devaki, and then he killed his own children. And after that, of course, then they were delivered. Krishna went and got them because Devaki said, I want to see my children, and later they were delivered. So originally they were the they said the grandsons of Brahma. And then they took these different forms. But Vishnu Chakraparti also gives a symbolic, not symbolic, we can say also, in one sense, it simply represents the appearance of Krishna, how one can see Krishna. So he takes Marichi as representing the mind, and the six sons as being the sense objects, that is, sound, touch, form, etc., and thought. The five sense objects and thought, tanmatras, plus thought, which is the sense object of the mind. So these are the six sons, in one sense, of Marichi. And then Kamsa represents fear. And Devaki represents bhakti. So why are these sense objects manifest within bhakti? So he says, in the process of bhakti, that is in sadhana bhakti at least, we will get these things appearing. That is, one will have an attraction for sense objects or sense gratification, we say, in these six forms of form, smell, taste, thought, etc. So those are like the six sons within Devaki. Of course, Devaki is also pure, so they cannot actually contaminate her. She's actually a Nitya Siddha devotee also, and these sons appear, there's no contamination for it, because they were the material sons of the Lord of Marichi. They're not spiritual beings like Devaki. So how they could get born inside her when they're only material and she's actually spiritual? So the thing is, it's like Krishna. The whole universe is in Krishna and he's still spiritual. And so in the same way, even Devaki is not touched. Even though these material entities, material bodies are born within her, she's not touched by that at all. She's still pure. She's aloof from it all. So anyway, within bhakti, we will have these obstacles, six obstacles appearing in the form of which are represented by the suns. And the devotee understands that these things which appear when practicing bhakti are dangerous, and therefore he has a fear of them, and he prays to the Lord, please, I'm afraid of these things, please get rid of these things, help me get rid of these things. So the fear is represented by Kamsa. So then Kamsa, because of the fear of the devotee of these things, then eventually they get removed. So that's why Kamsa kills all the six children. And when that is accomplished, one reaches a stage of purity where one can perform pure devotional service. So at that point, Balaram enters. And so Balaram creates a suitable platform for service to the Lord. And Balaram is the greatest servant of Krishna. So he provides a very suitable place. Actually, his amsa is Anantashesha. And when he leaves and gets transferred to Rohini, he leaves that Anantashesha there as the basis for Krishna to be born, the base of Krishna. So therefore, when one gets that basis of bhakti, real, pure bhakti, then one is qualified to see the Lord. And then the Lord appears. So then, after that, Krishna appeared within bhakti, within Devaki. So that's his analysis of this whole thing.
One
another explanation
that the six sons of Marichi,
which
they also represent the six enemies of
conditioned soul. That's Kama, Krodha, Loba. Yeah. I don't know, does that come from Sanatana Goswami's or what? Well, see, in the Bhagavatam, in the purport of Prabhupada, it says that. Mm-hmm. But actually, in the thing, it was the six sense objects. I don't know.
But it also makes perfect sense.
Yeah. In either case, they're anartas.
So then all the six vices have been destroyed, and then one becomes really qualified for killing.
Yeah. Another point he mentions there is that in the process of bhakti, these things arise. As in, he said in Madhurya Kadambani, he also says, within bhakti, we get bhakti utta anartas. When you're doing devotional service itself, these are not coming from past. They're not karmas, they're not desires from past lifetimes or anything. But within devotional service, one can develop weeds. In other words, by devotional service, we get things. We get material objects, which will become an object of attraction. So it's not due to past karmas, but bhakti itself will attract material things to us. And then we may develop, different attractions of sense objects that way. So maybe that's what he means when he says it. These arise within bhakti. So these have to be cut out, and then the devotee should recognize them and fear them, cut them out, and then he can perform pure devotional service, and then Krishna will appear within that bhakti. So that is the situation. All the notes have arrived, it looks like. So that is quoted here, actually, there, that whole section. After the... that's quoted there, after these diagrams, that's quoted. So then, Krishna finally made his appearance. It's a very nice section in Bhagavatam. It describes that. When Krishna was appearing, everything became wonderful due to the force of Yoga Maya. Even though it was night out, the lotuses bloomed. They don't bloom at night, but somehow the lotuses began blooming because he was born at midnight. And even though it was monsoon season, it became like spring, and all the spring flowers began to blossom at that time. And all the birds began to sing. Even obviously at nighttime they all sleep. But when Krishna was born, then they all began to chirp and became very excited. And the stars in the sky also arranged themselves very nicely, and actually he quotes exactly the arrangement of the different planets and the different houses there in the Bhagavatam. He quotes that. And ultimately the moon was in Rohini Nakshatra, which is in Taras, which means it's exalted in that state. So, and the moon is also the dynasty of Krishna. He's born in the moon dynasty, and moon became exalted there. But he was born on the 8th day of the waxing moon, which means when the moon gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it goes to Amavasya, it becomes black. So actually the moon was getting smaller at that point. But because of Krishna was being born, the moon became full suddenly. Being a full moon. It reversed back and became full out of excitement because Krishna was born in the moon dynasty. So the moon became very full. So in this way all sorts of auspicious symptoms are manifest when Krishna was born. By the you say the cooperation of Yoga Maya and all the other Shaktis involved. So then Krishna took his so-called birth, but actually it was not a normal birth, because actually he appeared in Vasudeva's mind first, and from his mind he went into Devaki, and then Devaki began to she conceived, and then she began to manifest all sorts of wonderful symptoms, so that, you know, Vasudeva understood, oh, the Lord is coming this time. So, and then finally, she gave birth. And the birth also was very special, because actually it was not a full birth. Krishna was born after 8 months of pregnancy, which is very early for a child, a little early. So it was surprising, and of course, Kamsa didn't expect it. And when the child came out, it was even more surprising, because he was Vishnu form. So Vasudeva was astounded also that here somehow I'm seeing Vishnu, and Vishnu is not seen by yogis or gyanis or anybody. Very, very difficult to see, and I am seeing this form of Vishnu right now. And he's also appeared as my son, and he's also appeared with all of his jewels on. So he was very surprised by this form that came out. Of course, there was a reason for that, and Krishna also explained it, and he said, well, actually, this is to show you that your prayer has been fulfilled. For three lifetimes, you're taking me as your son. And so if I don't show this form, then you won't understand that, you know, actually I'm fulfilling your wish to come as your son. So that's also explained, that he was in three different births. The Lord took his birth from Vasudeva and Devaki in other forms, obviously. He was born as Prishni Garbha in Treta Yuga. It was Treta Yuga, yeah. As the son of Prishni and Sutapa. And then he was born as Vamanadeva. And the third time, he was born as Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna, to Vasudeva and Devaki. And he told them this, that I'm coming like this. However, then we'll think, because of your prayers, and then he says, then you attain you attain me. But we have to understand that Vasudeva and Devaki are actually Nityasiddhas. So how are they getting born in these different forms with not Krishna, but in other forms? How is this happening? So this is explained that these are not actually directly Vasudeva and Devaki. They are Amsas also, expansions of them. Yeah? They're not the full Vasudeva and Devaki. Yeah? Because Vasudeva and Devaki are always with Krishna. Yeah? And with that Krishna, not with these other forms. So these are amsas of Vasudeva and Devaki. So anyway, Krishna was came out and they were surprised. So we see the whole thing is described in the Bhagavatam where they talk to the Supreme Lord and Krishna. Yeah? They have affection for Krishna because they regard him as their son. And at the same time, they have this great respect and they're praising him as the source of the universe and everything like this. So that there's a mixed type of devotion. Yeah? They have Vatsalya Rasa, definitely. And they're trying to protect him. And they say, what are we going to do with you? Because Kamsa's coming to kill you. And they show this great affection. At the same time, they think, well, he's the Supreme Lord. So he actually doesn't need protection because he can kill everybody. So there's a mixed relationship with the Lord of Aishwarya and Vatsalya. It's a mixture. So this is in great contrast, actually, with Nanda and Yasoda's relationship with Krishna. There is no aspect of Aishwarya at all that he is the Lord. Nor do they want to see that. They never desire to see that. And if it ever appears, it gets covered up because of their love. So we see later in the pastimes of Krishna, he will display his Aishwarya. He will kill demons. That's his Aishwarya. He will kill Putana, he will kill Trinavarta, he'll kill the Sakarasura, he'll kill Bakasura. And every time this happens, how can a little child do all this? And then we'll think, well, then they'll see he's God. But they don't. they ignore it. They say, yes, Gargamuni has said that he will be like Narayana, Narayana Sama. He will not actually be Narayana, but Narayana will be come within him and protect him at all times. So they make up an excuse every time.
They say that
so they find some excuse at all times for everything that Krishna does, if it is Aishwarya. And they think of only as our child. And they want to protect him. So even though Aishwarya may Krishna will manifest Aishwarya powers, he will get covered up by the great intensity of the love of the inhabitants of Raja. But for the Vasudeva and Devaki, on the other hand, they respect him as God. Simultaneously, they also have this affection for him as child. So it's kind of a mixture. Later on, when the inhabitants of Raja went to Kurukshetra, and then they met with all the, with, you know, Devaki and Vasudeva and other people, all the Yadus there. Then privately, Vasudeva and Devaki and Krishna and Balaram were there, and Rohini also. And Nanda and Yasoda were so, particularly Yasoda was so overwhelmed by Krishna and Balaram that she ignored completely Devaki and Rohini standing there. And they were trying to tell her, well, actually, it's not your son, actually. It was actually when Devaki was the real mother. But she didn't listen. She could not hear anything. And she was simply crying and putting Krishna on her lap and doing all these things. And they were really shocked because she could just ignore them. And was so much overcome with ecstasy on seeing Krishna. And then they understood that actually, how is it that she, even though it's not her son, because they didn't think it was her son, you know, that how she has more love for Krishna than I do. Yeah? Because I'm the actual mother, and she's not the actual mother, but her intensity of love is so great. Yeah? And then she was shocked by that. And then they said, well, I guess we better leave now, and they walked out. They let them, you know, continue their ecstasy like that. So therefore, Vasudeva and Devaki were the parents, but actually Nanda and Yasoda were the parents also, and they were greater parents. So, actually, it is described in the Bhagavatam, but it's a little bit hidden, that yes, Krishna did appear as the child of, and it was born from Devaki. But, and then a little bit later, Mayadevi was born from Yasoda. But simultaneously, when she was born from Devaki, she was also born from Yasoda. Krishna was born. So he was born in two places simultaneously, and then shortly after, Mayadevi was born. So therefore later it's referred to that this Mayadevi is the younger sister of Krishna. So if Krishna was born from Devaki and Mayadevi was born from Yasoda, they wouldn't be younger sister. Only if Krishna was born from Yasoda, then she could be called a sister. Anyway, there's many little arguments which are given to show that actually Krishna was simultaneously born in both places. So actually, Yasoda gave birth to two children. But by Yogamaya's potency, she didn't understand anything. She thought only Krishna was there. And she didn't even know the other child was born at all, the Mayadevi. And then Vasudev came over the river with the other child. So then when he came, there were actually two children. He also didn't see by Yogamaya potency. It was dark anyway. And he put the child down, and it merged with the other child. So we have one Krishna, back to one Krishna. And then he took the other child, who was Mayadevi, and took her back to the prison house.
Now, what was the most prominent argument of Gaudiya Vaishnavas against the idea that Krishna was born in Mathura, and some other people in Vasudha? Is that because in Srimad Bhagavatam, because that was like an ongoing battle, you know,
And if it wasn't there already, because if it was only the child from across the river, the cord would already be cut. And it would have been very strange if he went to the child and cut the cord and it wasn't there.
If he was born in Mathura, then that would mean the umbilical cord is so long, but it goes from Mathura to
Vrindavan. Yeah. Or it would have been cut already. And then he wouldn't have been able to do the ceremony if it was already cut. So this is another argument which Vishnu Chakravarti raises, that he would have been shocked if he had come to cut the umbilical cord and it wasn't there already. He would be very suspicious, you know. But he wasn't, and he regarded this as his son. The other point, of course, is that the intensity of love of Yasoda and Nanda for Krishna proves that he was the son. Because their love was so intense. No matter what we say, he's the actual son of Yasoda and Nanda. And of course, he's eternal also. Yeah? They're all Nityasiddhas, and Krishna is the eternal son. So he's never the foster son. He's actually the real son in the spiritual world. And in, of course, in his Nitya Leela on earth also. So therefore, the reason the Acharyas say this is because it's all eternal. And that he's eternally the son of Yasoda Ananda. And their Vatsalya Rasa is not illusory, it's real. They regard him as their son. Yeah, and Nanda Yasoda also. Yeah, was it three lives or at least one life? They were Drona and Dara, Droni and Dara, previous lifetime. That's also very interesting, that story, because Parikshit asked this question: how is it possible that they could get this Krishna as their son? And then the Sukadeva says, okay, because previous lifetimes they meditated. And they wanted to have, Krishna as their son. So therefore, in this birth, they were born like that. Huh? But that's not the real reason. Because how can it be that they were sadhana bhaktas and they had to go do this whole thing of becoming perfect? Huh? So therefore, Vishnu Chakravarti explains that these are also amsas again. And that they joined into the Nityasiddha, Yasoda, and Nanda, when Krishna made his appearance on this earth, and they joined at that time. So they are expansions, actually. playing a role for Leela, and then they joined into the Nitya Siddha, Nandan Yasoda. Yeah, well, they were actually devotees. Devaki and Vasudeva also, they did austerities, but their prime process was bhakti. It was pradani bhut bhakti, as I'm saying. It was yoga misra bhakti. It was mainly bhakti, but it was yoga misra. Therefore, it was this mixture of Aishvarya with their love of God, because it was this mixture also. So that was reflected in their practice and also reflected in how they relate to Krishna. No, they meditated on the Supreme Lord, yeah, in bhakti. Yeah. But they're definitely not sadhana bhaktas, so this is only amsas playing that role.
And then the time came when he was supposed to go around and ask for
for Bhiksha. This is, you know, beautifully, you know, very bright young boy and
shaved
and with the, you know, with the clothes, he's going out and asking for Bhiksha. So then he suddenly, and then Devaki was standing with her hands full of jewels and gold coins or many, you know, many valuable items. And then he was going towards her, and she was expecting, you know, such an important time. She was the first who was supposed to give him the alms. And then he remembered that many years ago in Vrindavan, her mother showed that she was caressing him and, you know, packing him, and then she was telling him that one day when you will go to the Supanayana Samskara, and when you will go out to accept alms, then I will put in your chadar, you know, so much gold and so much valuables and so much jewels. And then he remembered his mother, because she made him this promise, and he started looking around and saying, "Mother, where are you? Mother, where are you?" And he started crying and running around, and then he fainted at his heart. And Devaki was just standing and waiting when he came, and when he approached him, he just completely ignored and forgot about him. And he was running and, you know, screaming and crying out like that. So this is another very powerful show, this miracle of Ranjit Vrindavan.
So, actually, this way Krishna appeared, and his pastimes, his major pastimes, are with Nanda and Yasoda and the Brajavasis, not with Devaki and Vasudev. So later, of course, he did return, but they missed all of that. They missed all of those pastimes. They missed his childhood. So Krishna favored the association of Nanda and Yasoda over that of Devaki and Vasudev. So he left that place, and he had all those pastimes with Nanda and Yasoda. So in the Bhagavatam, actually, Sukadev Goswami, or not Sukadev Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he glorifies the love of Yasoda like anything. Of course, this is before the Rasa Lila and all that, but up to that point, he glorifies the love of Mother Yasoda as being so high. The intensity of her love was so high. And he glorifies her as the number one devotee, because of that intensity of her love. Okay. Well, this explains what the Jat Karma and all that stuff there, and the umbilical cord also. So actually many reasons are given here. You can read this. Many reasons are given for the defense that actually Krishna was born from Yasoda. So he gives four or five different reasons here. Of course, the ultimate reason is that Krishna is eternally the son of Yasoda Ananda. Nitya Siddha like that. He's also eternally the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. In both. But we cannot say he's only the step child of Yasoda, and he's eternally linked with them. Probably, I guess we should stop there because we go on to another topic. Any other questions?
I think someone was asked that we accept Krishna and Vrindavan as the topmost manifestation of the personality of Brahma. If someone was to ask where in Shastras it said like that, because I was presented with this question once, and I asked him in terms of equality manifested. Because even in where Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita and so on, where he mentioned that Krishna is the supreme being, all those qualities, he should manifest all those qualities in Narayan, and this, Son of Deity, and this. But I never came across any statement.
Oh, well, of course, it's a little indirect in some cases. The reason for that is Shastra itself sometimes speaks indirectly. This is quoted in many places in the Bhagavatam itself. The Lord says, I prefer indirect statements. Huh? So in other words, things are not explicitly said. Hmm? And again, he says, bhakti is the highest secret. Of course, he also produces Bhagavad Gita and tells us, okay, surrender unto me, etc. Nevertheless, the other shastras generally cover many different topics. So we'll have Karmakanda and Gyankanda, etc., all these different things. We'll have Upanishads speaking about Brahman, etc. Nevertheless, even there, we'll find that bhakti comes out. But we'll see that often it's in relation to Narayana. So, but two of the main sampradayas, the Madhvas and the Ramanujas, basically, that yes, they believe in bhakti as a process, and they believe in one God, but as Narayana, Vishnu is supreme. Why? Because they're basing it on Upanishadic statements, whatever. That isn't to say that there are no Upanishads to talk about Krishna, because that's elaborately quoted by Vishnu Chakravarti in some commentaries. He'll quote from the Gopātapani Upanishad, for instance, elaborately from that one. Of course, that's not accepted, let's say, by the Mayavadis. They only accept 10 Upanishads, not that one. Anyway, he quotes, Vishnu quotes from that one. That's also Upanishad. If you look in the 108 Upanishads, it's there among them. So, and this is what is called Shruti, Vedic. It's part of the Vedas, eternal. So it's respected as Shruti. So it's not that it's not there, it's there, but it's not always accepted by, other sampradayas or Mayavadis or whatever. However, it's still, that's a little bit indirect, because the predominance is, of course, Vishnu in the Vedas rather than Krishna. Why is that? That is because Krishna is very special, and he only appears once in the day of Brahma. And even when he appears, it is very difficult for most people to understand. And that is why Lord Chaitanya has to come in Kali Yuga to explain how Krishna, relates with his devotees in the different rasas, and ultimately reveals Radha Krishna, because it's difficult for people to understand. Even he does appear. So before he appears, they can't understand at all. And when he does appear, some people can understand, but not that many. And only when Lord Chaitanya comes, then it becomes more acceptable. So before Lord Chaitanya came, all the other sampradayas were thinking Vishnu is supreme. And when Lord Chaitanya comes, then he announces Krishna is supreme. So, of course, that's not simply a statement that he says, but it is supported by Shastra. So if we look at Bhagavad Gita carefully, then Krishna says, I am supreme. And then if we go to the Puranas, and we come to the Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, there it says Krishna is supreme. Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. And then why did Vyasadeva write Bhagavatam? To show Krishna. So where does he show Krishna? In the 10th canto. And if we look at all the other Puranas, which were also written by Vedavyas, we'll find, of course, Krishna's mentioned, many other avatars are mentioned. But even though other forms of God are mentioned, we will not find such a detailed description of any form of God as we do find in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Basically, the whole Bhagavatam is meant to glorify Krishna. As who? As the supreme form of God. So if anyone asks for Praman, say, Bhagavatam is the Praman. This is showing Krishna as supreme. Why? Because the whole 10th canto is dedicated to him, 90 chapters, to one form of God. The other thing, of course, is that it is a little esoteric in one sense, to understand Krishna. And of course, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, don't teach this to the people who have no sense control, and the people that don't have any faith, and the people who are envious of me. So we shouldn't, boldly declare this to people that don't have the proper background. If they do, then we can start explaining these things, and they may accept, or they may partially accept. But if they are very fortunate by association, then they can accept more and more and more. So sometimes it may be difficult for them to accept in the beginning, but eventually they can accept. So it depends on our preaching also, how we approach them. And we shouldn't expect everyone to agree immediately also. And basically, understanding Krishna is a matter of taste. So if one develops that taste for Krishna, fine, then one will accept. And in one sense, when we're preaching what are we trying to prove? We're not trying to prove anything. We're just trying to reveal something, truth, and if people accept it, fine. If they don't, misfortune. But what is the difference of Krishna from other forms? In one sense, nothing, because they're all God. If it's Rama, Krishna, or Nishrimadev, we cannot say that somebody is less. They're all God, so God is one. Yet there is a difference in one sense. What is the difference? The difference is the taste of the rasas. Krishna manifests complete rasas, all 12 rasas completely. And he does it in a very sweet way. So this is what Rupa Goswami says. What is the difference between Krishna and Vishnu? It is the matter of the rasa, and particularly of the Madhurya rasa and of the rasalila. That is remarkable with Krishna, and nobody else shows that. So that's the remarkability. That's why we're preferring Krishna, because of that different taste, basically. But they're all forms of God. If they're willing to accept some form of God, that's very fortunate. At least they're on the right path. And if they can accept Krishna, if they have some other form, and no matter what we say, they're still attracted to that form, fine. We cannot do anything. As Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya with Venkat Bhatta in Sri Ranga. He was 4 months with them, but they didn't change. Gopa Bhatta. But Venkat Bhatta didn't. They were saying, okay. But they said, okay, Vishnu is supreme, and he defeated them in argument, and it still didn't change. So then he left them, he didn't force them, he didn't joke with them. And similarly, of course, Murari Gupta was a Rambhakta, and Anupam was a Rambhakta, and he didn't interfere with their faith either. Once they had established that faith, and then he said, okay, this is for you. So as long as they're accepting a bona fide form of God, and they're also worshipping according to a bona fide form, if they're fixed in that, then we accept that. We can tell them if they accept, fine. If they don't, then let them do.
I have a question. When I first became a devotee, someone gave me a Krishna book, and there's one thing which, you know, I still don't quite understand is when Arjuna and Krishna, they're traveling through the layers of the universe, and they're visiting Mahavishnu, and then they pay obeisances, and Mahavishnu tells them, "You are my incarnations, now in the rhyme." So I still don't understand that. Why Mahavishnu says that you are my incarnations?
As far as I recall, you could take those words in different ways, and ultimately, we can also take the other way, that Vishnu is the amsa of them. of Krishna also. So it depends on how you understand Sanskrit as such, that sometimes you can give different meanings to the words, you know, in different ways. That's also, he does here in the beginning where it says Amsa Bhagena, etc., that Balaram appears, or Krishna appears as Amsa, like that. And they say, well, Krishna's being an Amsa of Vishnu. But we can take it another way also, and it doesn't actually mean that. So therefore we can, in other words, it depends on the way we interpret those words, amsa and whatever. So even though it may sound like that, it can also be read in a different way, so that actually it's Vishnu saying that I am your amsa. I'll look at detail in the commentary, but I think he says actually it means that I am your amsa. But then if we say that Krishna is eternally Nityasiddha in that form, we can't say he comes as an Amsa, could we?
No, but he didn't call him Amsa, did he?
Did he say Amsa there or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
if he comes from them in one sense, of course, it manifests through them.
He came from me, and I'm going to have
to see you. Oh, that's all. There are several statements which can be taken in different ways, I think, and these are explained in the Krishna Sandarbha, actually, because other people will specifically take different verses that show that Krishna and Balaram are the expansion of Vishnu's hair, I think, the black and white hair, something like a Sita Krishna hair or something like that. So they have given elaborate explanation why it doesn't mean that, etc. And all these different things, the disappearance of Krishna and everything. Huh? You can take one meaning of the words and it looks very materialistic, or you can take another one and you'll see that, you know, Krishna is actually not the Amsa of Vishnu, it's the opposite. So it depends on the way in which we read the Sanskrit sometimes. Okay. Hare Krishna.